From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 26th day of August 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will join us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. There's rain in it, maybe some, for Iowa. We'll hear how that dry state might get a little bit wetter, and well, whether Drew thinks it will get a lot wetter or not on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today settled a quarter lower at 340.5. New crop December 354 and a quarter, down a quarter. And the March contract a quarter lower at 366. July of next year unchanged at $3.77 a bushel. September beans up 5.75, 919.5 the settlement price. November at 924 and a quarter, up 4. January 930.25, 3 higher, and the March contract at 932, up 2.5 cents. And bean oil futures were 26 cents higher. The bean meal down a dime for the day. July soft red winter wheat up a nickel at 553. The hard red July at 487, 5.75 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago. October contract $107 even for 100 pounds, down $1.77.5. The August feeder cattle up 22.5, but the September down $1.30 at 141.77.5, and lean hogs for the day in the October at $55.55, down 40 cents on the afternoon. Crude oil for the day a dime lower at $43.44 a barrel. Ethanol futures unchanged at $1.28.5, and heating oil down about $0.01.2. That's diesel fuel at $1.24.7 per gallon. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $1.36.1, 3.4 cents lower. Natural gas down 3.5 cents at $2.45.4. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 78 points higher. The U.S. dollar down 0.08 at 92.935. And gold futures for the afternoon, a settlement price there, actually a trading price, up $14.30 at $1,926.10. We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, to take a look at what happened in Chicago and around the planet as it trades. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today, Jackie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the things we normally do with you. What's on your list for the day?
Well, let's start out with corn. And of course, I've dropped out September and moved now to December and March in corn, and in beans November and January, because we have first notice day coming the end of this week. Corn, December, support 344, resistance 368, crossover point for the down and uptrend lines is at 381. March, support 350, resistance 373, up-down trend line, crossover point is 420. Beans in November, 899 is support, 962 resistance, crossover point is 831. January, 887 support, 894 resistance, and 882 is the crossover. And again, I want to remind people that this is a continuous monthly chart is what this is based off of. So we look at the Dow Jones. We have our fifth month higher. We're almost through the month of August. Support 26,888, resistance at the all-time high of 29,568. Dollar index, support 92.06, resistance 94.65, fifth month in the lower trend. And, you know, I was talking with one of my friends from Bloomberg, and we were talking about the fact that we really need to see the dollar peak so that we can sustain a good recovery in corn and bean prices. And when I say good recovery, what I'm suggesting is that a range of probably $3 to $4, $4 resistance, $3 support. Managed money this week, interesting. Compared to last week, long 2,000 soft red wheat, short 10,000 last week. Corn, short 65,000 compared to 110,000 last week. Beans, long 115 versus 58,000. Soy meal long 7,000 versus short 18,000, and soy oil 61,000 long, compared to 62,000 long. So you can see there's been quite a switch in the corn and bean area, Todd. You know, we've lifted a bunch of shorts in the corn and added a bunch of longs into the beans. We look at export inspections. Wheat exports running 3% ahead of a year ago. USDA is forecasting a 1% increase. Corn 12% behind a year ago. 13% is what the USDA is projecting for us to be down. And soybeans are down 5% on the year compared to a 6% decrease that the USDA is projecting. So we're really closing in on a lot of those numbers as we get closer to the end of the season.
What about ethanol usage at this time?
Well, we had an ethanol report come out today, and the thing I took away from it was we had 93.32 million bushels of corn used last week, which is really good, and we only need to average 88.14 to meet the USDA estimate of that 4.85 for corn usage for ethanol, and so that's good. We're still down from where we were last year in terms of ethanol production. But we're seeing some improvement as we move along.
Do you want to go through some of the supply side things? Let's start with the crop ratings from Monday of this week. What'd you make of them?
Well, I wasn't surprised. Let's just put it that way. I mean, you know, one of the things I do want to point out, though, is that we were at 64% good to excellent on corn. When you look back to 2018, we were at 68% the same week, and we came in at 176.6. So, you know, we're not that far off from that. Beans, 69%. In 18, we were at 65%, and we came in with a 51.6 yield. And so, you know, it's one of those situations where as we move forward, we'll see what's. You know, crop ratings are tough at this time of the year. You're going to expect to see a drop anyway, just because of the fact that, you know, the crop is maturing. And especially with the heat that we've been having now. One of the things I did want to mention, Todd, is that September USDA report, which comes out on the 11th, is going to give us the first objective yield numbers for corn and beans. And normally we used to get it in August. Now it's September, and we all ask for September. So that's going to be a very interesting thing, too, because that'll give us just one more part to the puzzle in contrast to just using crop ratings to try and guess what's going on.
Yeah, and it is all about total production, and USDA in the September reports will update acreage for the state of Iowa, trying to get a better handle on what the derecho may have done in terms of harvested acres.
Right.
So we'll see that. And then they'll come back again in October when they normally would update harvested acreage
and
do it again for the nation. So it'll be interesting to follow along on that path. But as I mentioned, a yield is one thing, but bottom line is it's about total number of bushels that are in the bin and what's left over in the export market and total supply compared to total consumption. And I guess we have to work through that still. And some have wondered, Jackie, about this rally in corn and why it hasn't been stronger given, you know, the dryness across the Corn Belt, especially in the western part of Iowa in its largest production crop reporting district. And then, of course, the derecho in eastern Iowa as well, which will have taken some fields, I'm sure, I've seen it, to a zero at this point.
Right.
So it all comes into that supply side. But the marketplace, while it's been rallying, hasn't been horribly strong, although it does have a nice little island bottom in it, I guess.
It does. And, you know, I've been encouraging people reward the rally, scale up your sales, finish your sales on crop, on old crop corn and beans, and be prepared on new crop because even though, you know, and I think that's part of the reason we're not rallying as much is that the expectation, the futures are saying to me, store corn. There's 14 cents carry in the market from September to December. There's another 12 cents carry from December to March. You know, if you don't have a place for corn to go that needs to come out of the field and go somewhere, you need to do it now because this market is saying, okay, we know that we've had the Del Reco. We know that we've had all the different things that have gone on that have been impacting the market. But one of the things that has kept us supported have been the sales to China. And you can never, ever count on that being from one week to the next. You really don't know. And so I think traders have gotten burned plenty of times. So they're just more cautious than they might have been in other years.
Now, the Chinese, speaking of them, have met with the U.S. delegation by phone, said, yeah, we're gonna meet the phase one agreement. And there continues to be information coming from them that they're planning on buying, a record number of soybean bushels for the 21 year. So,
right. You know. That's a great thing. That's good. You know,
well, I mean, if it comes to fruition, it is a good thing, right?
Yes. Well, they did come in today. They secured that 408,000 metric tons of corn that they rumored last week. And so, you know, that's a positive thing. But again, we just don't know. I looked at inspections this week in China. You know, they're actively taking sorghum and corn out of the Gulf. They're taking wheat and corn out of the Pacific Northwest, beans out of the Gulf, interior Pacific Northwest. I mean, and these are not little numbers. These are big numbers that they're taking. The problem is you know, I have caution here written for myself. And I have to always keep that in mind. You know, their active buying is adding to this current rise in prices. We have to be prepared for them to potentially stop as we move into harvest, because there's going to be a point that they're going to say, hey, these prices have gone higher than what we want. And they know that the minute that they pull back on buying, what happens to our prices? They go down. And especially if it's met with a very large crop. And even though we've had issues that we're not going to have a crop as big as we thought we were going to have, the reality will come into the market that it's still an extremely big crop. I looked at Pro Farmer's numbers, Todd, and you know they came in at a 14.82 billion bushel crop for corn with 177.5 yield. But they have a 1% deviation on that, which takes them to either 14.9 or 14.6. Well, you know, 14.9 is not that far off of where the USDA was originally. And when you look at beans, 4.36 with a 52.5 bushel. I mean, they were just out in the fields. Now, granted, they have a deviation from the final numbers, but all of this drives the market. And so I really, really want our listeners to be cautious and to try not to get so emotionally wrapped up in the fact that this market is just going to keep on going and keep on going. I see it all the time. Boy, one day a guy calls up and he said, I'm going to cover my stuff. I just know the pandemic is going to affect things. Everything's being affected. I can't. And the market goes up the next day and he's totally on board with the bull. You know, and I mean, it's a natural thing because we want more for our grain. But we also have to be realistic about everything that goes on in a business. And that just means that you can't hope it's going to happen. You have to be prepared for what may or may not happen.
Scott Irwin tweeted out, I made note of this, that the using the national or the average historical gap between the Pro Farmer number and the final USDA number, if you use that and multiplied it out, you ended up with a 181.8.
Oopsie.
Right?
Which is what the USDA is at, right?
And, yeah, know. Same as what the USDA is at. All right. So just a Oopsie. Thought, right? just a thought. So other final things I want to go through. You always give us like the trend line comparisons for yields and soil moisture across the Midwest.
This week, the five states with the best soil moisture were North Carolina, Kentucky, Minnesota, Tennessee, and Missouri. In fact, I talked to a Minnesota guy this morning who said, going to have the biggest bean crop and the best corn crop he's ever had. And he's like directly across from Fargo. So that's where his farm is up in Minnesota. Five states with the lowest soil moisture: Iowa, Nebraska, Michigan, Ohio, and Arkansas. And, you know, they're saying we're going to be dry for the next few days, but there's a possibility of a front coming through. And then, of course, down in the south, they may get some pretty heavy rain. So we'll have to see once, you know, if that comes to fruition. When we look at those trend line comparisons, Todd, you know, we're looking at a big change from last week. We only had 9.7 and below trend line in corn, 24.9% this week. 28.9 was above trend or at trend line the week before, 24.3% this week. 52.5 were above the trend line. This week we dropped to 41.9. And the interesting thing is we saw Iowa just crash down into states below trend line. And so, you know, they are by far the biggest production state. And Ohio is right in the line again. They're right in between being below trend line and at trend line. So, we'll have to see. When you look at soybeans, we were at zero for below trend line. Now we're at 13.5% of the acres at trend line. We were at 22.4, we're at 20.1, above trend line, 72.7, now we're at 61.5. But, you know, those are still significant. The big thing that the acres that came in were, of course, Iowa dropped into the below trend line numbers. And so Mississippi, again, just riding the line, trying to figure out whether they want to go into at trend line or stay below the trend line. So they're just on the cusp, basically, is what it is. So you can certainly see why the market got excited.
Hey, one final thing. Brazil and Argentina, anything from South America this week?
Oh, my goodness. Here's a good example of how things can change. Southern Brazil experienced a rare killing frost. They had temperatures in the mid to low 20s Fahrenheit. They think that they lost about 10% of their anticipated wheat production. And normally at this time of year, their most common problems are either dry weather or heavy rains when they try to harvest. So La Nina is expected to delay the bean planting in Brazil, which wouldn't be a surprise. And so a lot of people say, well, there's no way we're going to get the bean numbers that these guys are talking about. Well, that's not true, because you can plant beans late down there and still get great yields. The crop that it really hurts is the second crop corn, or safrinha. And they revised the soy crop for the last seven seasons up by 14.4 million metric tons. I thought that was interesting. The reason it happened is because they didn't run out of beans to export as they were expected to do. And I happen to remember that same thing happened to us many, many, many years ago. So the discrepancies that they found were in internal consumption and the production of beans in the country. So CONAB, who was involved in doing the increases, came in here and said, now this is unbelievable, but they're expecting Brazil to produce 133.5 million metric tons of beans next year. And one of the reasons that they're coming up with that number is they're factoring in the fact that there's 40% sales already for next year's beans, which is twice as much as they had the same time last year. And so Argentina, poor Argentina. Economic activity was up 7.4% in June, but that contracted 12.3% from the same period last year. So they're struggling with the pandemic down there, as well as all the other issues that Argentina has.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Jackie Vex with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I think we have a lot to cover across the planet. Let's begin in Iowa. There's some talk that rainfall might come. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think there is a chance for some rain for sure coming up for Iowa. We've got a little aggressive frontal boundary that's going to come along early next week. A lot of cold air behind it, and as warm as it is in the Midwest, will probably condense out some moisture. One of the cautions I would like to suggest here would be, don't get convinced that Iowa is going to get a big general soaking of rain, certainly not the west or northwest half of the state. I think what's going to happen is we're going to bring the front in. There is going to be rain in most of the state, but it's not going to be real general soaking. There's not that much moisture available. The Gulf of Mexico is going to be partially open for a moisture source, but not fully opened, and that's because of high pressure aloft that's going to stay over the Gulf Coast. So even though we're going to bring in the frontal boundary, we're not really pulling moisture up from the Gulf of Mexico. And you know that Iowa and the neighboring areas are not very moist right now. There's not much humidity out there. And with Laura going off to the Northern Delta and into the lower Ohio River Valley area and over to the Mid-Atlantic region, that's going to pull a lot of moisture with it as well. So there's not a good reason for us to be overly excited about volumes of rain in Iowa, but perhaps we'll get enough that we can stop the decline in crop conditions. But there's still going to be a definite need for more moisture there.
Any reason to believe that Laura will be a big problem or any problem at all for much of the Delta growing region? And specifically, I suppose I'm thinking of the northern areas.
Yeah, you know, when it does come up from Louisiana and Arkansas, it will turn to the east and go across the Missouri Boot Heel and western Tennessee, that northern Delta area. There will be some breezy conditions and there will be some heavy rain, but it really won't be any different than having a cluster of thunderstorms moving across that area producing some heavy rain. So we'll pick up on maybe 2 to 4 inches of rain. Somebody could get something a little bit more than that. There might be some local flooding, but I can't get too excited about this having a big impact on agriculture. Maybe a little delay in some field work perhaps a small little concern about early open boll cotton might have a little quality decline or a little concern about boll rot or something like that. But this isn't going to be a big deal for those areas. But boy, I sure don't want to make it sound like this storm is nothing, because it is going to really tear up that Lake Charles area.
Before we leave North America, anything in the prairies of Canada?
Yeah, you know, this we've got two waves of cold air coming up over the next week to 10 days, and they are both potent cold. My concern is in the western prairies in Alberta, where there's a fair amount of canola and wheat that is still immature because they've had a very wet and cool summer. And they need more time. They need some really nice, warm, dry weather. And I don't think they've strung more than a row without any shower activity over there. Anyway, the cold's going to come along and drop those temperatures down to the frost and possibly some freeze levels. And so there's potential we might do some damage to the crop up there that's immature. A little farther to the east, it's been so dry in parts of Saskatchewan and southern Alberta, as well as a few areas in Manitoba, that I don't think the cold will cause much of a problem. We've really been pushing these crops toward maturity. Now, the late season crops like flax and corn and soybeans, maybe some late canola in the eastern prairies, could be vulnerable to a little bit of a frost freeze. But I don't think it's going to get quite cold enough to really do damage until we get to the second event, which is going to be about 10 days from now. And by then, I think these crops will be close enough to maturity. It won't be a big deal.
Before I let you go, we should drop in on the growing regions of northeastern China, where corn is one of their primary crops.
That's right. And like here in the States, they've got their own typhoon to deal with. Typhoon Bavi is getting ready to move into northeast China, right across the old Manchurian provinces, coming in from the Liaoning and North Korea border area. It is going to be a Category 1 storm when it comes inland, but most importantly, it's going to dump upwards to 8 inches of rain across the northeast provinces there. And earlier this week, there was already rainfall that ranged from about 4 to 12 inches across some of that region. So adding this typhoon on top of that saturated soil situation is going to worsen some flooding. So corn up there is not maturing very well because of all the wet bias. They do need to dry down. They'll get an opportunity maybe a little later in September, but for right now, they certainly are facing a lot of rain here near term.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us here on this Closing Market Report for a Wednesday afternoon.